Welcome to this new detailed edition of the BayPay Forum Blockchain News. My name is Cindy and today is May 29, 2020. This edition is brought to you by PayCademy, the first business academy to learn payments and fintech. If you have some news in payments and fintech, send it to us at press@baypayforum.com and we will do our best to include your news. In this edition, we will talk about Discovery Science to premiere crypto-funded TV series about DragonChain, GSX Group's new digital securities venue tokenizes first client shares, Blockchain ID solution aims to tackle spike in delivery fraud amid coronavirus measures, it's tough getting approved in Gibraltar, says green-lighted crypto derivatives exchange. Passwordless login startup Magic raises $4 million from Naval Ravikant, placeholder. Bitcoin rally falters as stocks drop ahead of Trump's China speech. Digital Dollar Project calls for two-tiered distribution system in first white paper for US CBDC. First mover, Bitcoin rally shows traders don't care that Goldman hates their asset class. In Trump versus Twitter, decentralized tech may win. Now let's get started. Discovery Science to premiere crypto-funded TV series about DragonChain? A new series about blockchain project DragonChain is premiering on Discovery, and it's been fully financed with $1 million in crypto. Production house Vision Tree Media said Friday its new open-source money documentary series, which will track crypto project DragonChain, would debut on Discovery Science, a US TV channel run by Discovery Inc., which also owns the Discovery Channel. While the five-part series, scheduled to start July 4, will center around DragonChain, Vision Tree added it will do so against the backdrop of the broader cryptocurrency industry. The firm name dropped former Overstock CEO Patrick Byrne, crypto entrepreneur Brock Pierce and companies including Facebook and Disney as the big names interviewed for the series. On its website, Vision Tree says the successful launch of the Open Source Money series is critical because it will help put cryptocurrency and blockchain technology on the map, as well as in the hands of more people passionate to make a change in the world. When CoinDesk asked how the series was funded, Vision Tree said the $1 million budget came from its own Coin cryptocurrency. The DRGN token has been languishing not far above record lows for over a year, following an early post-ICO spike to nearly $5 in 2018. Prices at press time were just below 10 cents per token. The limited documentary series features the untold, heroic story of DragonChain, gushes the press release. A spin-out from Disney, DragonChain allows enterprise users to securely store data on a blockchain. It raised more than $13.7 million in a sale of its DRGN token in late 2017. A trailer for the new series shows one of the documentary's main themes as the darkening regulatory environment toward crypto projects in the U.S. Back in 2018, DragonChain forced one of its affiliate projects to return investor funds but didn't say why. A Vision Tree spokesperson didn't say why the series focused specifically on DragonChain. GSX Group's new digital securities venue tokenizes first client shares. Gibraltar Stock Exchange GSX Group's digital securities platform has tokenized the shares of a client for the first time. The recently launched blockchain-based venue, GRID, allows for the tokenization of securities using GSX Group's native STACS network. In this inaugural issuance, shares for ad tech firm Tribe OS were created and distributed digitally. STACS is a scalable digital ledger network layer that stacks on top of existing financial institutions and facilitates tokenization of the financial services industry, GSX Group said in a press release Wednesday. We are excited to have completed the successful digitalization of Tribe OS shares, said Nick Cowan, GSX Group CEO. Tribe OS is the first issuer to utilize our grid venue, and we look forward to welcoming further pioneering companies who wish to push the boundaries of innovation and accelerate the adoption of blockchain within the capital markets. With blockchain initiatives like GRID and STACS, GSX Group said it's working to help move the capital markets away from the cumbersome and costly legacy infrastructure and make traditional financial structures more interoperable. Our ambition is to deliver dynamic cost-saving solutions, broaden the accessibility of capital and help issuers in terms of speed to market, Cowan said. Last year, the Gibraltar Stock Exchange began allowing financial firms to list blockchain-based securities on its GSX Global Market platform. It said then that its existing regulatory permissions from the Gibraltar Financial Services Commission, GFSC, cover the use of blockchain or distributed ledger technology. Using the grid to create and deploy our shares in digital form allows for a quick and cost-effective route into the digital space, Tribe OS CEO Matt Gallant said. Blockchain ID solution aims to tackle spike in delivery fraud amid coronavirus measures. Nuggets, a digital identity and payments platform, has developed a way to accept deliveries without needing a physical signature to combat a spike in fraud and chargebacks during the COVID-19 pandemic. Using biometrically verified contactless delivery technology secured with blockchain technology, the London-based firm wants to equip consumers with the means to provide verified proof of identification while still maintaining the social distancing required under coronavirus measures. Nuggets says the contact-free signing system would help counter a rise in delivery fraud and chargebacks amid the pandemic. Since customers no longer have to sign for deliveries in order to maintain distancing, fraudulent chargebacks are skyrocketing. Citing figures from the UK, Nuggets also said failed deliveries have also cost courier firms as much as $1.6 billion, $2 billion United States dollars. Merchants are so overstretched with increased orders, staffing issues and supply chain fulfillment problems that having to dispute chargebacks ends up at the bottom of the list, said Nuggets CEO and co-founder Alistair Johnson. During a delivery, the courier would use an app to scan the receiver's digital ID issued by Nugget to verify they are indeed the customer who ordered the items. When the customer is successfully identified, the parcel is delivered and a proof of delivery is immediately sent to the company at which the purchase was made. Nuggets said the system guarantees verified delivery of a package to the right recipient, while using a blockchain allows for the secure communication of customers' biometric and payment information. E-commerce has seen a huge boost in recent months, due largely to coronavirus stay-at-home orders. Global courier DHL has seen volume growth of more than 36% in domestic volume and 28% cross-border volume from the daily averages seen in February, industry publication Air Cargo News reported on May 14. The combination of the astronomical costs facing our e-commerce businesses, from fraudulent chargebacks to failed deliveries and fake user reviews, big savings can be delivered by having Nuggets integrated, said Johnson. CoinDesk reached out to ask the firm when its technology might see real-world adoption but did not immediately hear back. It's tough getting approved in Gibraltar, says green-lighted crypto derivatives exchange. Receiving regulator approval to operate in Gibraltar is anything but easy, crypto derivatives exchange ZUBR told CoinDesk. ZUBR, which began trading in March, said Wednesday it had received in-principle approval from the Gibraltar Financial Services Commission, GFSC, as a distributed ledger technology, DLT, provider. The approval is on the condition the exchange addresses some of the regulator's feedback by the time it gets its license. But just getting to this point has proven difficult. From day one we realized 100% that we would have to sacrifice a lot to get into the regulated space, co-founder Oleg Ravanushkin said. Even before the regulator provided feedback, ZUBR capped its maximum leverage at 20x and introduced high entry barriers to ensure it only served professional, not retail, clients. The GFSC has offered DLT licenses since the beginning of 2018. based on 9 very general principles, including one clause that an applicant must conduct its business with honesty and integrity. The license provides a broad stroke and flexible regulatory framework for any activity that comes under the umbrella of DLT, such as to transmit or store value on behalf of others. Around a dozen companies have a Gibraltar DLT license, including the blockchain subsidiary for the Gibraltar Stock Exchange. Ravanushkin said there's probably another 12 more entities going through the application process, alongside themselves. 9 principles may seem like an overly simplistic framework, but CUBR disagrees. It took us a preliminary application to go through to a full application stage, to go through to a set of interviews with key GFSC personnel, then a set of presentations of our business model and a number of rounds of follow-up discussions and additional requests made by the regulator to have clarity on very specific questions, ZUBR's chief legal officer, Olga Okunova, said. It's not that straightforward to just come and get a Gibraltar license. Why, oh, you cannot just, you know, switch to Gibraltar, Ravanushkin said. We had to be comfortable with a lot of additional, you know, checks and outsourcing providers to make sure that the trading was transparent and that the market structure was solid so there's no manipulation whatsoever. It's going to be 10 principles pretty soon, he added. Neither Ravanushkin nor Okunova described the regulatory feedback as changes, but rather more of a fine-tuning of something we have discussed thoroughly with the regulator, Okunova said. Ravanushkin said this could include relocating more of their staff to Gibraltar, but added, I cannot obviously comment on the exact nature of this. But Ravanushkin confirmed none of the changes will affect its core business model. That's probably a relief. ZUBR forked out $30,000-$37,000 just for the application fee for the Category 3 license, which covers companies dealing with complicated assets, including crypto derivatives. Having first submitted its license more than 12 months ago, Ravanushkin reckons ZUBR will still have to wait for a few months before it receive its full license. We'd love to have it tomorrow, he said. Passwordless login startup Magic raises $4 million from Naval Ravikant, placeholder. The blockchain industry desperately needs password solutions that aren't such a royal pain in the neck. That's why the San Francisco-based startup Magic just raised a $4 million seed round from investors like Naval Ravikant, SV Angel, placeholder, Lightspeed Venture Partners and Volt Capital, just to name a few. SV Angel in particular has a complementary portfolio, including Coinbase, Stripe, Airbnb and DoorDash. Magic points the way towards a world in which user identity and authentication is decentralized and not subject to control by the tech giants, Ravikant said in a press statement. Plus, Magic CEO Sean Lee said his startup already works with some decentralized exchanges, DEXs, like Uniswap and Radar Relay. As such, Chicago DeFi Alliance member Volt Capital also represents a strategic pairing. After all, DeFi's biggest onboarding challenge is the user experience, not any lack of demand for low-barrier loans and global currencies. Volt Capital partner Imran Khan said Magic's delegated key management service lets app developers create custom sign-on experiences without touching the user's private keys. I think the recession will increase their business, Khan said. Startups are going to look to be more efficient. They'll use platforms like Magic to cut costs. Most importantly, Khan added, Magic serves clientele beyond the crypto industry because it can authenticate based on whatever protocol the platform is using. Placeholder Capital co-founder Joel Monegro agreed, adding that enterprises are also looking for secure ways to grant employees remote access to permissioned networks. That might be a way we see more adoption in an enterprise context, Monegro said. It's bridging the gap between the traditional web authentication paradigms and the crypto authentication paradigms. Any company with a login and a website could use Magic as a door without needing to rebuild a customized onboarding solution in front of the house, so to speak. Monegro said, at the end of the day, authentication is all about making key management approachable. This is a way for users to not have to give up their data, Khan added. Magic is using blockchain as a back-end infrastructure, in a way that any platform can easily integrate. Simplifying keys. Stepping back, private keys are basically really long and complicated passwords that users can't reset. Most internet users opt to trust platforms like Facebook in exchange for the convenience of a simplified username and password, plus the option of recourse if the password is forgotten, rather than retain full control over the asset or profile information. The key represents the singular piece of identity. You can use it in conjunction with 3Box to manage the data associated with that identity, Lee said, referring to the consensus-backed startup 3Box. We're going to be working together on this authentication product. Magic is also aiming to serve developers, especially decentralized application (DApp) makers from the Ethereum community. Lee estimated 5,000 developers and teams are currently using the tool, including Democracy Earth and TokenSets. We can manage keys within the browser without having to rely on Chrome extensions, Lee said, offering the example of a shopper. The private key never passes through the Magic backend and goes straight to Amazon. He said this early-stage startup is still on track to make more than $500,000 in revenue this year, despite the recession. And with the customer-facing sector of the industry saturated in wallets, service providers and apps, Lee is betting instead on selling to the businesses that already have users rather than needing to attract a massive audience to turn a profit. I think only a few niche things will eventually explode, Lee said. The majority of crypto adoption will happen with mainstream companies gaining access to crypto applications. Bitcoin rally falters as stocks drop ahead of Trump's China speech. Bitcoin's bulls are taking a breather amid jitters in the traditional markets over rising tensions between the US and China. The world's biggest cryptocurrency is trading near $9,400 at press time, having posted an 8-day high of $9,620 on Thursday. Prices have gained 8% so far this week, according to CoinDesk's Bitcoin Price Index. While Bitcoin looks to be consolidating on recent gains, major European stock markets are flashing red for the first time this week. Leading the way lower is Germany's DAX, down 1.5% on the day, followed by France's CAC, which is reporting a 1% decline. Across the pond, futures tied to Wall Street's equity index S&P 500 are down 0.5%, as per investing.com. Markets look to have become cautious ahead of President Trump's response to China's decision to implement a national security law in Hong Kong, putting the jurisdiction's autonomy in doubt. We'll be announcing what we're doing tomorrow, Friday, with respect to China. And we are not happy with China. We are not happy with what's happened, Trump told reporters on Thursday. Trump warned earlier this week it would impose sanctions on China if the law is introduced. The expectation is Trump will announce some symbolic sanctions against individuals and companies. That said, with the presidential elections due in November, a bigger action cannot be ruled out. The resulting geopolitical tensions could bode well for Bitcoin as many analysts and investors consider it a safe haven asset. I expect serious anti-Chinese rhetoric in the coming days, weeks, months as Trump tries to use nationalism, protectionism and anger towards China, COVID as a major catalyst for support, Philip Gillespie, CEO of B2C2 Japan, told CoinDesk in an email. I am personally bullish on Bitcoin due to a combination of excess stimulus from all the major central banks, ample liquidity in the system, and pickup in geopolitical risks. Meanwhile, analysts at Stack, a provider of cryptocurrency trackers and index funds, believe the geopolitical tensions have created a perfect storm for the cryptocurrency. In fact, they suggested in a weekly report on Thursday that the cryptocurrency's week-to-date gains are the result of increased haven demand fueled by the US-China tensions and the slide in the yuan. Previously back in 2019, similar fears have driven Chinese investors to move their onshore RMB, China's yuan, out of the country, where speculators reckon a part of that has trickled into Bitcoin given the increased demand over the same period, according to the report. We are observing similar price action currently as Bitcoin has rallied 6.2% since, from $8,700 to $9,250 level, once again breaking out from its 2019-2020 daily trendline. It remains to be seen if the geopolitical tensions escalate and lead increased haven flows into Bitcoin. the cryptocurrency did rise by over 30% in the first half of January when Iran and the U.S. conducted airstrikes on their respective bases in Iraq, injecting geopolitical uncertainty into the financial markets. Some might argue that Bitcoin failed to perform as a haven asset during the height of the coronavirus crisis in March. While that is true, almost every asset, including classic safe haven asset gold, took a beating back then as investors fled for cash. Aside from President Trump's China speech, Bitcoin analysts are also keeping an eye on the May expiry of cash-settled futures and options contracts listed on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange, CME. 23K Bitcoin equivalent futures and 10K Bitcoin options are set to expire this Friday on CME. Approximately 50% of open interest for each product, crypto derivatives research firm Skew tweeted earlier this week. Price volatility tends to pick up around the time of expiry of futures and options activity due to increased trading activity. However, CME's contribution to total futures open interest listed across the globe is only 11%, according to Skew data. Similarly, the Chicago Exchange's contribution to total options open interest is also quite low, so the expiry due Friday at 1500 Coordinated Universal Time may not have a major influence on prices. Digital Dollar Project calls for two-tiered distribution system in first white paper for US CBDC. The Digital Dollar Project is proposing a framework for the creation of a US central bank digital currency, CBDC. The group published its first white paper Friday, detailing the need for a tokenized version of the US dollar and some potential avenues for building this system. A digital dollar could help the US maintain the dollar's status as the world's reserve currency while serving a broader array of individuals and entities than the current financial system, the paper says. The group is helmed by former U.S. Commodity Futures Trading Commission, CFTC, Chairman Chris Giancarlo, Gattaca Horizons CEO and former CFTC Chief Innovation Officer Daniel Gorfein, Accenture Senior Managing Director David Treat and Pure Storage CEO Charles Giancarlo, with contributions from a number of Accenture analysts and directors. The Digital Dollar Foundation, which is working with Accenture on the project, was launched earlier this year. What we're hoping to be is a catalyst for a discussion here in the United States about what role the U.S. will play in this ongoing and accelerating global debate over the future of money in a new digital age, Chris Giancarlo, now senior counsel at Willkie Farr & Gallagher LLP, told CoinDesk. As such, the paper explores the current U.S. financial system and advocates for a digital dollar that utilizes a two-tiered distribution architecture, with commercial banks and other regulated entities acting as intermediaries between the Federal Reserve, the U.S. Central Bank, and end users. These commercial banks would distribute the funds much the way ATMs distribute cash to customers, the paper said. The digital dollar envisioned by the paper could even operate alongside private stablecoins, the paper said. When we do big things in the United States as we did with the space program, as we did with the internet, it's almost always a very healthy partnership with the private sector and the public sector, with each learning from each other, with the private sector bringing innovation to bear and the government looking out for core principles of privacy and individual rights and liberties and getting that balance, Giancarlo said. Two-tiered system. Any U.S. CBDC should maintain the existing two-tier banking system, the paper said. A two-tiered banking system preserves the current distribution architecture and its related economic and legal advantages, while inviting innovation and accessibility, it explained. Under this model, the Fed would issue digital dollars to banks, while users could either store funds in their accounts or hold onto these tokenized dollars in their own digital wallets. The bank would be able to lend against the funds held in accounts, the paper said. Unless the digital dollar is put into a safe deposit-like storage or custodial solution, once exchanged for balances in a bank account, it is fungible with other monies as it is on a bank's balance sheet, the paper said. This type of system will ensure that individuals and entities store funds at commercial banks, the paper said. These deposits underpin the U.S. entire economy by enabling banks to lend funds to borrowers for activities such as buying a home, building a new factory and everything in between, the paper said. Treat told CoinDesk that part of the Digital Dollar Project's work would be helping stakeholders understand this proposed system, basically understanding where the tokens are moving within the ecosystem. The two-tiered system would also need to be able to satisfy both individual privacy concerns and regulations around financial transactions, including anti-money laundering and Know Your Customer AML, KYC rules, he said. To have the endpoints of where the tokens can move be a regulated wallet infrastructure, we think is likely the best answer, and part of what we'll test, he said. Accounts versus tokens. The paper also contrasted the concept of a token-based digital dollar with an account-based digital dollar, with a preference for a tokenized system. A tokenized dollar would be more broadly applicable, Giancarlo said. In reference to a series of bills introduced earlier this year by U.S. lawmakers that proposed account-based digital dollars, he said a tokenized version would be more broadly applicable. While the digital dollar proposals laid out before Congress refer specifically to stimulus payments meant to benefit American taxpayers impacted by the COVID-19 pandemic, the group's view is the digital dollar should be more broadly applicable. We think a true U.S. CBDC addresses that problem but then so much more, including building a new architecture for money for generations to come that will serve not just underbanked populations here in the United States during a crisis abroad and spur financial inclusion globally, Giancarlo said. The tokenized dollar should be faster, more efficient, less costly and able to extend the dollar's utility, he said. Here, too, it's important to firmly define what's being discussed, Treat said. One thing that we're trying to do with the paper and in our talks is introduce a set of language to just be crystal clear or make the conversation more clear, he said. Part of what the paper is doing is working on definitions and that lexicon for everyone. The basic notion of the interplay of an accounts-based system and a token-based system, I think, is incredibly important. Pilot programs. The next step for the project is to develop a series of pilot programs and tests for a number of potential use cases outlined in the paper. The use cases are broadly categorized as being either part of domestic payments, international payments or government benefits, and range from direct peer-to-peer payments to issuing government aid in response to disasters. Giancarlo said the pilot programs may be evaluated based on a number of factors including the proposed token's impact on the money supply, technological choices, privacy from both government intrusion and commercial exploitation, impact or use in sanctions and compliance with AML, KYC laws, among other concerns. What about the ledger itself? How permissioned or permissionless, or is it a distributed ledger at all? Giancarlo said. All of these issues need to be worked out so that we can come to the table with a lot of events. Even after all of the theoretical planning, the proposed tokens would still need to be tested in real-world scenarios, he added. Past the planning stage, it'll require lawmakers and policymakers to actually execute any potential digital dollar solution, Treat said. We're here to get the conversation going, to provide thinking, experience and expertise, and we will leave it to the policymakers to set the pace, he said. So our ability to comment on what's possible, the value of it, where it's headed and the importance in the long term is the most important part. This process will all take time, Giancarlo said. He projected that the process of building a digital dollar could take 5 to 10 years, but added, we've got to start now. We very much say the dollar is way too important to try to be done overnight or something over the weekend, Giancarlo said. First mover, Bitcoin rally shows traders don't care that Goldman hates their asset class. Cryptocurrency traders don't seem to care that Goldman Sachs is such a Bitcoin hater. At least, that's the signal markets are sending. Bitcoin prices have surged since the Wall Street heavyweight's money management division declared in a presentation this week that the cryptocurrency is not a suitable investment for our clients, merely a beneficiary of a mania worse than the infamous run on Dutch tulips in the 1600s. You're reading First Mover, CoinDesk's daily markets newsletter. Assembled by the CoinDesk Markets team, First Mover starts your day with the most up-to-date sentiment around crypto markets, which of course never close, putting in context every wild swing in Bitcoin and more. We follow the money so you don't have to. You can subscribe here. The bullish market reaction shows crypto traders largely shrugged off Goldman's bearish commentary, doubling down on Bitcoin while spewing vile condemnations and ridicule of the analysis on Twitter. On Thursday, Bitcoin rose more than 2% to about $9,400. The price is now up 33% in 2020, versus a 6.2% decline on the year for the Standard & Poor's 500 index of large U.S. stocks. Goldman's own shares are down 12%. One cryptocurrency trader even speculated Goldman may have weighed in on Bitcoin because the Wall Street firm's clients were begging to know whether they should jump in or, put another way, if they were at risk of missing out on future rallies. The global backdrop is that investors are desperately seeking ways to make money these days, with interest rates on U.S. Treasury bonds close to historic lows. Buoyant stock market valuations don't seem to reflect the economic devastation from the coronavirus. A report Thursday showed more than 40 million jobless claims have been filed since early March. Bitcoin might be getting a closer look from big money managers and rich families following reports earlier this month that the legendary hedge fund manager Paul Tudor Jones II is now betting on the asset. Investors also might be looking at the year-to-date returns and wondering why Goldman didn't steer them toward Bitcoin sooner. Goldman Sachs would not have put together this fancy presentation without demand or questions about crypto from the clients, said Denis Vinokourov, head of research at the London-based digital asset firm Bequant. Patrick Lenihan, a Goldman spokesman, said the presentation speaks for itself, declining to comment further. Invented just 11 years ago, Bitcoin has already smeared egg on a lot of prominent naysayers' faces. Past performance, of course, is no guarantee of future success. But the list of casualties includes the billionaire investor Warren Buffett, who in February described the cryptocurrency as having no value, only to see the shares of his own conglomerate, Berkshire Hathaway, tumble 18% this year as Bitcoin rose. It goes without saying, as Goldman's investment analysts pointed out, that Bitcoin prices can be extremely volatile. That might just be the nature of new technologies, volatility isn't uncommon among many small-cap tech companies whose stocks were taken public by investment bankers working for Goldman and its Wall Street competitors. Amazon.com shares tumbled 80% amid the dot-com crash of 2000 long before the internet commerce giant eclipsed department stores including Sears, which filed for bankruptcy in 2018. Another U.S. department store chain, JCPenney, filed for bankruptcy protection earlier this month, as sales diminished because of coronavirus-related lockdowns. But many big, sophisticated investors are comfortable with risk, as long as the potential rewards look attractive enough. Long-term growth is the goal. On that count, Bitcoin's market capitalization has grown 11-fold since the end of 2016 to $173.7 billion. Over the same period, Goldman's own market cap has fallen to $69 billion from about $95 billion. Jill Carlson, co-founder of the Open Money Initiative and an investor in early-stage startups with Slow Ventures, wrote Thursday in an op-ed for CoinDesk that Goldman's report contained so many flaws that it's not worth detailing every misconception or failed bit of logic. According to her LinkedIn profile, she worked as a credit trader at Goldman in the early 2010s. That representatives have not adequately articulated the defining attributes and uses of this paradigm-shifting technology might be a fault of the crypto industry, Carlson added. Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg, addressing questions about the proposed Libra stablecoin at an annual shareholder meeting on Wednesday, noted how slow the traditional financial system had been to upgrade the plumbing behind payments. "The infrastructure around payments hasn't been updated in a very long time," Zuckerberg said. The broader question might be whether Goldman risks falling behind a fast-evolving digital asset industry that, by some accounts, aims to disrupt Wall Street and potentially displace it. Or if the firm's clients risk missing out on a big rally, with quick-to-pivot Wall Street eventually embracing cryptocurrencies as a promising asset class. Those clients have certainly missed out on the rally so far this year. Trend: while Bitcoin has gained over 8% so far this week, it's still lacking clear directional bias. Prices are yet to move out of a symmetrical triangle pattern on the daily chart represented by trend lines connecting the May 10th and 25 lows, and May 7th and 18 highs. A break above the upper end of the contracting triangle, currently at $9,780, would imply a continuation of the rally from the March low of $3,867 and could lead to a convincing move to the February high of $10,500. On the other hand, a UTC close below the lower end of the triangle at $8,782 would confirm a bullish to bearish trend change. That could cause more sellers to join the market, leading to a deeper price decline toward $8,000. Both the falling wedge breakout and invalidation of a lower highs setup confirmed earlier this week on the 4-hour chart indicate scope for a rise to the triangle resistance at $9,780. Further, demand for bearish bets or put options is weakening, as evidenced by a recent decline in the 1-month put call skew from 22% to 6%. On-chain activity suggests the big players are accumulating. The number of addresses holding at least 100 BTC rose as prices dipped from $10,000 to $8,630 in the 7 days to May 25, according to data provided by Glassnode. That may be a sign many investors are long-term bullish. At press time, Bitcoin is trading near $9,400, having risen from $8,800 to $9,620 in the last 2 days. In Trump vs. Twitter, decentralized tech may win. U.S. President Donald Trump signed an executive order Thursday, seeking to amend Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. Section 230 prevents social media companies from civil liability for the content posted on them. The order targets Twitter and Facebook after Twitter fact-checked two of the president's tweets. The text emphasizes Trump's commitment to free and open debate on the internet. Trump said that we are here today to defend free speech against one of the gravest dangers it has faced in American history before going on to identify that threat as a small handful of social media monopolies. Lawyers who reviewed the order say it's unlikely to accomplish Trump's goals. Trump was misunderstanding the law, they said, and had little chance of achieving genuine reform of Section 230 without congressional help. Campaigners for a repeal of Section 230 said Trump's intervention might derail their cause. But it also might offer an opening for decentralized technology, allowing innovation to substitute for government action on issues around misinformation, censorship, and the power of social media. See below. Misunderstanding 230. Trump neither understands nor cares about the law, whether it's the First Amendment or Section 230, said Mary Ann Franks, a law professor at Miami Law School, author of The Cult of the Constitution and who has written about Section 230 extensively. All he cares about is power, and he knows that the only way to disguise this is to pretend he is being persecuted. Robert Kornrevere, partner at Davis Wright & Tremaine LLP, who focuses on First Amendment issues, said the executive order is not well informed about how Section 230 works or even what it says, much less how it has been interpreted by courts over the past two decades. It is a novel concept, to say the least, to suggest that the president, by executive order, can amend or modify an act of Congress, override hundreds of judicial rulings, and instruct independent federal agencies to take actions that exceed their jurisdictional mandates, said Kornrevere in an email. And these problems arise even before getting to the obvious First Amendment issues raised by seeking to punish or regulate social media platforms for their editorial decisions. Disclosure, Davis Wright & Tremaine carries out legal work for CoinDesk. Twitter responded to the order, saying the executive order was a reactionary and politicized approach to a landmark law. Section 230 protects American innovation and freedom of expression, and it's underpinned by democratic values. Attempts to unilaterally erode it threaten the future of online speech and internet freedoms, it said. Friday morning, the company flagged another of Trump's tweets for glorifying violence after he suggested protesters in Minneapolis, Minnesota, could be shot. One casualty of this tantrum is any serious consideration of long-standing and legitimate critiques of Section 230. Public debate around 230 centers around whether these platforms are publishers. To some, a decision to add a fact-check counts as editorializing, making such a platform a publisher. But this is a misreading of the powerful and unilateral immunity Section 230 offers, says Preston Byrne, a prominent crypto law partner and CoinDesk columnist. In a blog he said Section 230 does two things only, 1, ensures platforms and users are not liable for content and 2, that, if you complain about a platform moderating your content, don't expect much legal recourse. Good faith. Trump's order goes after the good faith requirement for removing objectionable content which could encompass whatever the platform chooses to amend. There's no good faith requirement the platform, termed interactive computer service in the section, or user of that platform be treated as the publisher or speaker of any information provided by another user. If someone says something defamatory about you, you can't sue me or Twitter over it, you sue the person that said it. You can't treat an online intermediary like a publisher, said Franks, even if it acts like a publisher. She's critical of Latitude to exercise good faith in taking down any content the intermediary finds objectionable and makes pretty much any parsing of good faith a moot point. It's all up to the company. In any event, Twitter didn't take down any content in relation to Trump, she said, they merely added to it. Section 230 has allowed platforms to flourish, and those same platforms to share disinformation, profit from the eyeballs that come with each cycle of outrage and deeply affect public discourse. The order calls on the Federal Communications Commission, FCC, and Federal Trade Commission, FTC, to re-evaluate the good faith requirement. In a statement Thursday, Commissioner Jessica Rosenworcel, one of two Democrats on the committee, said turning the FCC into the president's free speech police was not the answer. The process of putting the order together was hastily conducted, and included adapting an old order that had been floating around the White House for years, according to protocol. One casualty of this tantrum is any serious consideration of long-standing and legitimate critiques of Section 230, said Franks. It's an intentional hijacking of the principled calls for reform. However, Gigi San, a former counselor at the FCC, said Section 230 is not inviolable, meaning Congress could choose to address criticisms of the law. Amending this rule could improve online accountability, she argues, but also put upstart networks at a disadvantage. If moderation is now required, Twitter and Facebook are more likely to have the resources to do it properly. The little guys are already behind, and they will be even further behind if you keep carving out protections granted by Section 230, San said. This points out the incredible power of a handful of companies. The power to determine what people see, what people think and what people believe. That should not be. Decentralization. Whatever the fate of Section 230, technology offers a potential way forward without the need for new laws. San supports major internet platforms opening their services to competitors and making themselves interoperable. Denouncing ongoing efforts to break up big tech platforms, which are toothless due to decades of antitrust law attrition, San said. I'd rather see something like making them interoperable. That's the way you quote-unquote break up Twitter and Facebook. You make them open up their APIs, application programming interface, and policies to competitors to make use of, she said. I'd like to see it become mandatory. Forcing companies to decentralize or move to open standards would spur the creation of new businesses. The way you handle the power of a company like Twitter is by making sure it can be competed against, she said. A mandate to decentralize has some historic precedents, too. It's akin to what the Telecommunications Act of 1996 did for telephone companies, San said, referring to a bill that required communications operators to open their networks for competitive use. Unbundling online networks, and distributing the influence that one microblogging platform holds over the public conversation, would likely get them out of this constant criticism, she said. If platforms want to make the error of enforcing their political biases on their users, let the free market provide competitors. Twitter is working on a decentralized standard called Blue Sky, though not much has been revealed about the project since announced in late 2019. Twitter did not respond to a request for comment. Other networks, sometimes appended to a blockchain, already exist and are thriving. W.I.T.H. The recent politicization of Facebook, Google, and other big tech social media giants, the Web3 thesis for crypto has never been as underrated as it is now. Su Xu, CEO of hedge fund and cryptocurrency investor Three Arrows Capital, tweeted. LBRY, for one, cites the wanton power to censor and deplatform that centralized platforms like Twitter wield as one of its motivations for existing. LBRY's neutral protocol enables anyone to post content without reprisal, and stores this information on an immutable blockchain. The company's CEO, Jeremy Kaufman, said LBRY has seen 3 million active users in May, nearly doubling the count from preceding months. It also receives a number of new users anytime a crypto personality is banished from a big tech platform. The president is right to be concerned about the neutrality of companies like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube, Kaufman said. But he doesn't agree with making the government, as Trump just attempted, the arbiter of truth. If platforms want to make the error of enforcing their political biases on their users, let the free market provide competitors like LBRY that make this problem obsolete. Innovations like LBRY make it so that the interference of Twitter and YouTube is technologically impossible, he said. To be sure, there are issues with decentralization. Crypto Beatles, a prominent crypto YouTuber, tried the platform and found it wanting. There are currently no fully decentralized social media platforms I know of that work even remotely as well as the first version of YouTube, he said. He painted the picture of a platform with the network effects of Twitter, guided by the principles of LBRY. For his part, Kaufman said if Twitter were to decentralize, the biggest effect this would have on LBRY is the potential to slow our growth if it forces these companies to behave more responsibly. But they misbehave in so many other ways, I doubt this will happen. This concludes our edition for today. We want to thank again Paycademy, the first business school to learn payments and fintech, for their support. You can find more information on their website at paycademy.com. We hope you enjoyed it and see you tomorrow for our next edition.